And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Metrospective presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70 celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. I'm Ted Berg. I am joined, as always, in Zoom conference by the Athletics Mets beat writer Tim Britton. And Tim, we speak on Thursday afternoon after a Wednesday night game that saw Jacob deGrom come out looking more dominant somehow than we've ever seen him before, striking out, I believe, what was it, 8 of the 9 batters he faced in 3 innings, and then leaving after only 3 innings with shoulder soreness, the latest in a long line of what seemed to be fairly minor nagging type injuries. And I guess my question for you is, you know, what's the point in going on at this point? Why should I keep trying to maintain this waking life?
You're only asking that now on June 17th, 2021, not earlier in the last 15 months?
No,
this is the breaking point?
Yeah, this is it. It was, you know, like the pandemic I got through, but Jacob deGrom's series of minor injuries has just really like turned my life upside down.
It's just too much. Well, the good news is that, you know, like one of the reasons we waited to record this and do it like first thing Thursday morning is because we wanted to see what the Mets said about deGrom. And Luis Rojas, in his press conference this afternoon, said that the MRI came back good, that his shoulder looks like what a pitcher's shoulder should look like, which is, you know, probably worse than most people's shoulders, but still bad, you know,
I tend to believe condition. Jacob deGrom's shoulder looks in many ways much better than mine.
I mean, yeah, as someone who has a nagging shoulder injury and like can't throw a baseball more than 5 times before it hurts, yeah, his is probably in better shape than mine. But, you know, it has the wear and tear that a person who fires a projectile at 100 miles an hour several hundred times in a given week, that adds up over time. But that, in general, he is about, you know, this is like the best case scenario for after he left the game last night, that there's nothing that immediately requires anything long term, you know, a long term absence. They don't even have him going on the injured list yet, although they have not committed to him making his next start on Monday. You know, this is a difficult time for them to be losing a pitcher if they did place him on the IL, because they've got the doubleheader Saturday, they've got the doubleheader Monday. They already need a starter for Saturday. They already need one starter for Monday. If deGrom doesn't make that start, they need two. But also, this is not just the best player on your team, but probably the guy performing the best in Major League Baseball on any team right now. And you probably don't want to push him to the max without, you know, you probably want to act cautiously with him and figure out what's going on so that he is fully healthy for you, and you have to stop worrying about him leaving games prematurely the way he has 3 times already this year.
Yeah, and you know, if you watched DeGrom's post-game press conference or media availability, he was clearly frustrated, and he also made it clear, you know, that he hoped this was nothing much again, and that he hoped he could get back out there quickly again. And you made a series of good points about how, you know, right now is the time they need a pitcher. They always need DeGrom. He's the best player on the team. But, I mean, and obviously I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not an orthopedist. I haven't seen Jacob DeGrom's MRI looks like. But just based on the fact that this keeps happening, and that this guy is so valuable, and that you don't want this happening in August and September, and if necessary, October, isn't there a temptation to just shut it down? Just give him 10 days of, like, go to the beach. You know, just seriously, and like that sounds ridiculous, but like, why not take your time. And again, like you said, they need pitchers right now. And Jacob deGrom is their guy. They do have a pretty big lead in their division. And they have like a responsibility to keep this guy as healthy as possible. Because when it comes to October, you can't have him leaving after three innings for Sean Reed Foley. As much as I love Sean Reed Foley and his mustache and his weird delivery, you want Jacob deGrom out there. Why not be extra cautious, right? Why are we even talking about him making his next start?
Yeah, I think that's easy for us to say as people who did not go to medical school and haven't looked at anything. Like, you know, why not just take 10 days off and see what happens there? But, you know, the Mets' reasoning is like, well, what if we don't have, you know, we're not just going to take 10 days off with Taijuan Walker right now. We're not going to take 10 days off with anyone else just to take 10 days off. And if everything looks okay.
But Taijuan Walker doesn't have a 0.52 ERA. Right, like this guy's special. He's off the charts. Like you have to unprecedented performance calls for like unprecedented, I don't know, treatment. And I am all aboard the send Jacob deGrom to the beach for a week train. That's what I'm saying. That is my case. Send Jacob deGrom to the beach. Any beach he wants. Just send him to Fiji. There'd be like jet lag. There'd be jet lag, and there's this whole pandemic thing going on. It might be difficult, but like. The Hamptons, you got to be able to swing. And I understand the Hamptons are expensive. Jacob deGrom has a lot of money. The Mets have a lot of money. Steve Cohen has a lot of money. You got to be able to find him a nice rental in the Hamptons where he can just like lay back and have a pina colada and enjoy himself for a week and not throw a baseball and maybe hope that when he comes back, he does his two bullpen sessions like he needs. And then because it's so hard to believe. And again, I'm not a doctor. It's just so hard to believe that all of these little nagging things aren't related, because I'm not a doctor, but I am a human being with a body. And I think everybody knows that if you hurt one thing and you keep trying to do whatever it is you do, even if it's not throwing 102 miles an hour, you tend to compensate for whatever that other injury is and something else crops up. And sure seems like, you know, everything that's happened this year with DeGrom has been like right side of the body, upper body. And to me, it just feels like, I don't know. This guy might need a rest.
Jake doesn't seem like a Hamptons guy to me. I don't think that would be like his idea of a fun, relaxing 10 days. You know, I'm kind of playing devil's advocate with you.
I'm not a Hamptons guy myself. I'm just, that's a nearby beautiful beach.
The Jersey Shore, clearly superior.
Well, you're a Jersey guy. We could send him to Long. I would send him to Long Beach, Long Island, so he can like hang out with everyone from my high school.
You know, I'm playing devil's advocate with you. I think they probably should also give him some time down, because, you know, this has happened enough, and he's been cleared before, both by himself and by doctors. You know, after, you know, he I'm trying to remember, he had the lat tightness after the start against the Red Sox, and so, you know, he didn't leave that start early, but they skipped his next start. He came back against Arizona, left that start early with back tightness. Then he went on the IL, came back, was healthy for a little bit before leaving the start against San Diego with the flexor tendonitis, and then this issue on Wednesday night. So you've had a few instances, not just of him leaving the game early, but of him saying he's okay, you know, having his routine between starts, saying he's okay, and then experiencing something back when in action. So it does seem like, in the same vein that they did in mid-May, giving him a more prolonged break, be it 10 days or even a little bit more, might be the most prudent thing to do at this juncture. It is also interesting, though, that like Luis Rojas said on Wednesday night, you know, it's not like it's hindering his performance at all.
Right. That's what's crazy. You know, struck out the side in the inning he was hurting.
It's astonishing. Like, you watched that inning, and even like a little bit in the second inning with the Ortega at bat, it seemed like he wasn't his sharpest, in the sense that like the Cubs were fouling pitches off. He was not
right,
striking
like,
guys out.
How dare this guy go 10 pitches against Jacob deGrom?
He was not striking guys out in three or four pitches. It was taking him a bit longer. Like, the second inning, I think, was a 22-pitch inning. And the third inning was a 17-pitch inning. And this is a guy who's averaging under 13 pitches per inning so far this year. So you could be like, you know, oh, man, it doesn't look like DeGrom has his A stuff. He has struck out 8 of 9 guys, but it doesn't seem like he's on top of his game.
I said it like sort of jokingly on Twitter, like, Jacob deGrom's sitting at 100 miles an hour. I hope he's okay. And I was, as it turned out, he wasn't.
Right, that he was down a mile per hour So that's the kind of confounding thing is that, or confusing thing, that like whatever he's experiencing on the mound, it could be a case of him being properly cautious maybe a different pitcher would pitch through that on a night like Wednesday night and exacerbate it further on in that game. So I can see both sides of it. I don't think the Mets are necessarily idiots for trying to have him pitch on Monday if they do decide that is the course of action they want to do. I think it'd probably be more prudent to give him a little bit of time off and, you know, do what you can with in covering 14 innings that day without one of your main starters. But this is my struggle is I can see too many sides of too many issues.
That is, I mean, you know, having just simply having too much perspective is your cross to bear. What if it comes to it and they can't use DeGrom on Monday, where do they go? If he goes to the injured list, there's got to be like a baseball wide penalty for using the DL instead of the IL. But maybe I'm the last guy still doing that. Where do they go if he is not there?
Yeah, the four guys in the organization that make sense, and look, you know, even if DeGrom is healthy and is going to start Monday, they're going to dip into this depth a little bit. You've got Thomas Cipucki and Nick Tropiano are on the 40-man roster. Cipucki is the guy who was the closest to being called up a couple weeks back. And, you know, even in April, I think, there, you know, he was on the taxi squad and seemed like he might get a chance. So lefty prospect probably has the best future of any of the names I'm going to mention here, but also has been shelled in his last two outings for AAA, including on Wednesday night. I think he's given up 20 base runners or 18 base runners in 7 2/3 innings at AAA. It's not great.
Jacob DeGrom is working on 18 base runners like so far this year.
Right. Cipucki is not a guy who goes particularly deep into games. Part of that is the injuries he's sustained and coming back from Tommy John. But he's not a guy you roll out there and expect to give you really anything more than five innings. In a doubleheader scenario, that's not necessarily a terrible thing. If you're thinking like who might be the best of these guys on a per inning basis, it might be him. But also he's got a chance to kind of blow up. Tropiano is a veteran. They just claimed him off waivers from the Giants last week. He hasn't pitched in a professional game in the month of June because he's gone through that waiver process. He pitched out in relief for the Giants earlier this year and for, I think, the Angels last year and has pitched decently in short relief. What has been a starter earlier in his career has not been a great start. His ERA as a starter is like 4.4, which isn't terrible, but hasn't done that, you know, a bunch since 2018. So he's, you know, they picked him up, I think, precisely for this stretch of time to be either a starter or a long guy. And then the guys off the 40-man roster, who they could add, they have a spot on the 40-man to add someone if they wanted to.
So Tropiano is on the 40-man?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
They could add Corey Oswalt, who, you know, the Mets saw a bit of in over the last few years. I forget if Oswalt pitched for them last year at all, but mostly in 2018 he got the most run. And I thought did decently well for them and is throwing harder since then. So he's only made one start in the minors so far this year. He got off to a slow start. He was on the IL the first couple weeks, so they've used him out of the bullpen to build him up. And he is scheduled to start, I believe it's Friday night for Syracuse. You could hold him and have him go Saturday. And then who else am I thinking? Oh, Jared Eichhoff. Eichhoff has also been bad in his last two starts. You know, he's a veteran. He was with the Phillies for a while. He's given up 12 runs in his last 11 innings over two starts for Syracuse. His day is Saturday, so he's an option. And then I guess you got Tyler McGill, who's made the two AAA starts. He's probably pitched the best of any of those guys this year, but has the least experience in the higher levels. So none of those are really enticing options at the moment. You might be looking to get like three innings out of any of them. In a doubleheader game where you can lean on your bullpen a little bit more heavily, and you can kind of mix and match them with Robert Gazelman or Sean Reed Foley or Seth Lugo or someone else you want to get length from. That might be kind of the way they go. I don't know that there's someone there you're thinking like is going to give us five innings and three runs and keep us in the game.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Lugo because I did want to say it was nice to see a two-inning outing from Lugo. I wonder, was it Tuesday night they used, or was last night they used Lugo for two?
Tuesday to close it out.
Yeah, that was nice to see. Like, it's good to see them starting to use him the way they once had before. It makes me feel better about the bullpen, especially as it gets to late innings, especially in scenarios like the one. Of course, Lugo was unavailable, but the one we talked about in the last show on Sunday when they tried to push Familia for two, that's not really what he has done, where it is very much something within Seth Lugo's capabilities to go multiple innings. I would like to see the reins loosened as much as you can, because you want to be careful with him, obviously, coming back from injury, but that would be a useful thing, certainly in this stretch. I feel like they can cobble it together with the bullpen for, you know, like the seven inning thing, the seven inning games. This is where it you start noticing that difference, right? Like I actually, for all the rule changes, I'm cool with that one, the seven inning doubleheader. And especially as a Mets fan right now, because using Jacob DeGrom for a seven inning game is kind of a waste, right? And so like, again, like if that's his day, like, Give him the day off, and try to figure out your 14 innings with the guys you got.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's 13 games the Mets are playing over the next 11 days, I think it is. Yeah, and under normal circumstances, that's 117 innings, but you're saving 12 because six of those games are taking place in a doubleheader. So that's essentially taking off a game and a third in terms of inning. You know, it's really like 11 and two thirds of games in 11 days, which is a little bit easier to handle. It's just the way it's spaced out that you can't use your regular rotation on regular rest throughout that stretch. But I, you know, this is while they are playing well, obviously they've won six of seven. They've taken the first three from the Cubs, a team that came in playing very well, and they've looked good doing it. I think the fear you have as a Mets fan is, like, you look at this schedule and it's very easy. Like, I saw someone comment on one of my stories that, you know, they have a comfortable lead in the loss column. It's like they got a lot of games coming up. They haven't played as much as anyone else, so the lead in the loss column can go away quite quickly if you have, you know, like, you look at what happened to the Cardinals over a 2-week stretch where they went from seemingly in, you know, in front in the NL Central to like seven games out, because they had like a 2-13 stretch while the Brewers and Cubs played really well. And now Cincinnati's passed them too. You know, the NL East doesn't look like it has a team capable of going on that quite like the run Milwaukee or Chicago's been on right now. But, you know, if the Mets have a stretch where they go 2-8, you know, this 13 game stretch, if they go 3-10 or 4-9, that opens things up quite a bit in the division going into July.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was going to say, like, part of the luxury, and I think part of why it doesn't seem as worrisome as it could this upcoming stretch, is that the rest of the division has just really failed to distinguish itself. The Braves are kind of in free fall mode a little bit. I think they've lost 5 of 6 or 6 of 7. 6 of 7. Not playing well. Their pitching's kind of a mess. And then the Phillies, who had been playing pretty well, I don't know whether, and I should look up the status on his injury, but Bryce Harper left their most recent game with a back issue. So that's certainly concerning. And they lost the game, fell back to 500. It's a good time for a tough stretch for the Mets, right? Like this is a time when you, and like, I don't know. I try not to concern myself too much with like the psychological aspects of it, but I gotta feel like you feel a little more comfortable if you know you can take on 13 games in 11 days without like the second place team breathing down your neck.
Right, they've built themselves a little margin for error here. You know, if they were trucking along at right around 500 or right there with Philadelphia, you know, right next to them. There'd probably be a little bit more urgency to make a move maybe for a starting pitcher, because that will be, you know, that's still, regardless of DeGrom's health, I think starting pitcher will probably be their top priority at the trade deadline. I think at this point I would say it's probably someone who's kind of a, you know, someone who provides some stability at the back end of the rotation, like a guy you can count on to give you a bit more innings as your fifth starter until you get Carrasco and Syndergaard back. rather than, you know, like a Max Scherzer type that's going to start game two for you in the playoffs. But, you know, if DeGrom is out, if the team starts going into a little bit of a downfall here, then maybe you change both the urgency with which you go after a pitcher and kind of the ambition of your target.
I feel like we've got like a bit of a Vladimir and Estragon thing happening here with Syndergaard and really you and me with Syndergaard, because it just feels like, oh, it's like we're written in stone, like when Carrasco and Syndergaard come back. And at first it was like, oh, Carrasco will be back in early May and Syndergaard in the middle of June. And now it's like, when they get here, the rotation's going to be really good.
Yeah,
I mean, that reference, are we good with? I know you're a good novel guy. Does a classic play, does that ring?
Would you like to build a short, blunt human pyramid or something?
Perfect.
I forget if that might actually be from Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And I think the bigger issue is like with Syndergaard and with Carrasco, these injuries have been prolonged to the point where I don't think you count on them being their usual selves when they're back. And you're not going to get a sense, you know, obviously Syndergaard's not going to be back before July 30th. Carrasco, you might get a start or two before then. You probably won't have a firm sense of who he is at that point. So if that's the last point you can fortify your rotation for the last 2 months of the season and into the postseason, you know, I don't think you can bank on those two guys, you know, being postseason starters for you, or either one being a postseason starter for you necessarily. So that's why I think that even though the rotation has been probably the team's biggest strength, they've got the best starter ERA in baseball right now. That's still probably its biggest need come July 30th.
And that will be a fun thing to examine on the show as we get closer. But we're going to keep the show short today. As we mentioned, we're recording on Thursday afternoon. The Mets have yet to play their game against the Cubs. Hopefully nothing happens that makes this entire podcast moot.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
But we do have a question, and it's a general question, and it's one I've heard asked before, but one I have spent quite a bit of time thinking about. It comes from Paul. Paul wants to know, what kind of numbers, batting average, on base percentage, slugging, would you expect a regular guy to produce if he were to play a full season in the major leagues? Assume a full spring training and major league coaching and all the facilities is available to major league players. Also, this is thought experiment. It was only for a position player. Good, because anyone trying to pitch would just, that would be dangerous. He says, as for the regular guy, I assume 30s or early 40s, in good shape but not great shape, has remained active but is by no means a professional athlete in any sport. That honestly right now sort of describes me. I am 40 years old. I am active. I am in good shape from my own standards, but not good shape by a Major League Baseball player standards. I do play baseball regularly, but I am by no means a professional athlete. And I have thought about this. And I think that, and I don't want to sound like I'm overselling my skills. But do you have thoughts on this? What do you feel like you would be able to get a hit in a major league game?
Well, it's like my brother and I joke about this because he knows people who are like, you know, I feel like I could hit 100, you know, I could hit 100, 150 in the major leagues. And we joke, Chris Davis, a guy good enough to get a $161 million contract, is struggling to do that for several years. No one that we know, like recreationally in our lives, is going to be able to get a hit 1 out of 10 times in a Major League Baseball game.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah.
And I don't think most people we know would be able to get a hit at all in 600 at bats. I think it really comes down, you know, you suggested you have a strategy for this. My strategy would be to never swing until I lulled the pitcher into a false sense of security.
That is exactly you know whose strategy that is? Do you remember whose strategy that is?
Is this Robert Gazelman?
No, it's Bartolo Colon. That he used to do it. I don't know. I think you were still on the Red Sox beat for a lot of the Bartolo at bats, but I remember the time he hit his home run. I promise you this is true. I wish I had recorded it or something. I watched the first two pitches of that at bat, and he stood there with the bat on his shoulder like he had no plans to swing. And I called, my wife doesn't care about baseball at all, but I was like, come in here. He's baiting this guy. Because I knew he was doing it. And sure enough, James Shields then throws a meatball fastball right over the middle. And that's when Bartolo takes his cut. And that is exactly my plan, Tim. I am going my first 300 plate appearances. The bat stays on my shoulder. And I believe that major league pitchers walk 2.5% of plate appearances. I think they're all better athletes and better hitters than I am. They were all the best hitters on their high school team. Many of them were the best hitters on their college team. I'm not saying I can walk that often, but I do believe that simply by standing there and not swinging, you would walk every so often, because I think that it is probably the type of thing that gets into the opposing pitcher's head, knowing all I have to do is throw three strikes here. I don't think they would do it 100% of the time. And so I feel like in my first 300 plate appearances, I could probably draw five walks just by never swinging. Hopefully never getting hit by a pitch, because then that would be it for me. I would be done. I would never be able to stand in the batter's box again. And then after 300 plate appearances, and again, it's not Jacob deGrom, because there's nothing quick to twitch muscle wise there. I just don't think there's a world in which, with all the training I could ever have, I just don't think there'd be any way I could physically catch up to 100 miles an hour. But there are enough guys who throw 90 to 92 that might be lulled into security and into the sense of security of throwing 85 to 88. And now again, it's not easy to hit 85 to 88. If you've seen 85 to 88, it's coming real, real fast. But I'm saying I've had the whole year to train using the major league hitting coaches and the major league batting machines and everything else. And I'm in great shape because I've been working out in the major league training room all year. And I do believe I could get a hit at some point. I think my walk rate would plummet once I actually do start swinging. And again, you got to be judicious with when you swing, because you don't want people to believe you're going to swing. You want them all still in that false sense of security that you're never going to swing. I think that by my 500th at bat, I could get a single hit. And as soon as that happened, I would retire. And I believe I would retire with a 0.002 batting average and a 0.016 OPS.
I would not get a hit. I mean, you're talking to someone who, while a three-time Little League All-Star growing up, by the time we moved to actual field size, went entire Little League seasons with hits that he could count on one hand. And most of those hits were dribblers to third base.
If you could figure out how to hit the ball to third base in Little League, you're going to get a lot of hits.
Right, which was a problem, because most of the time I could not pull the ball. Playing in the New York-Boston media game at Fenway Park several years back, I was so surprised that I pulled a ball into left center field that I tripped over first base because I was so excited.
Oh no.
It was the first time I'd ever run to first base not being able to see where I had hit the ball on the route to first. And so I got a double instead of a triple because of it. My niece asked me the other day if I could tell the story of when I fell down on the baseball field. All I'm thinking about in terms of all of this is just how quickly I would tear an oblique or something.
I would
suffer an injury like that immediately, because I am not in peak physical condition for myself, let alone for someone my age. And so this would go poorly for me.
I will say on my hit, that I think that, first of all, I'm never going to pull the ball off a major leaguer, right? Even if it's a guy who's lobbing in 85, the best bet I've got is going to right field as a right-handed hitter. And so then, if the right fielder is paying any attention, he's playing me super shallow, and there's like a real, real good chance I get thrown out at first base, like a 9-3 put out. I am slow. Yeah, like,
I mean, the defensive positioning, I would assume that you'd have like three, like maybe six all four on the right side infield. The left fielder is just playing at second base, playing like on the grass in at second base. You know, there's just a lot of...
I don't think they know how to... They don't know how to shift you if you go 300 straight at bats without swinging, right?
I think they get an idea.
Yeah, it might.
You know, I feel like little leaguers figured it out pretty quickly who they could creep in on, you know? So
yeah. Well, I believe that, I mean, maybe this is wishful thinking, but I believe that given 600 at bats, I could achieve a single pathetic hit. That's it. Just one.
I do wonder, like, cause like speed is something that, I'm not like a terribly slow individual. But I did wonder, like, when covering the Red Sox, it's like, I don't know that I could beat David Ortiz in like a race to first base. Like, I think
he's a professional athlete.
But
he's a professional athlete. He doesn't look like he's that fast because you're watching Jackie Bradley Jr. and Mookie Betts. David Ortiz, I believe, could dominate me in every single, like in any physical competition you could come up with. David Ortiz will beat me.
Yeah, so that's like humbling because at that point I was young. I was in my 20s and I was looking at him as he was nearing 40 and being like, nope, he can still probably crush me in a race.
Yeah, I actually
one of the slower players in the league.
Remember David Ortiz quoted it. For all I know, you wrote the story, but it was like, you know, like sometimes you'll hear like, oh, well, this guy played shortstop in high school. And David Ortiz, one time I saw quoted saying like, we all played shortstop in high school. Like if you're in the major leagues, you played shortstop in high school because you're a professional athlete.
And it's so hard to get across, like, you know, think of the best player in your little league and then imagine him 1,000 times better. Like,
yeah,
that's,
I mean,
that's what it is.
If you've met anyone who played in the minors, like there was a guy I grew up with who played in the Cardinals system and made it to Double A. That guy in high school hit like 650 or something. You know, like these people, a kid who played when I coached at the high school, he was so good that he never got any at bats. They just like they would intentionally walk him with the bat with the bases loaded all the time. It was sad. It was sad to go to this kid's games because it was like this poor kid doesn't even get the opportunity to hit. And he also wound up, you know, in the minors and I don't think he made it past high A. And he was like worlds better than everyone else at the high school level at that time. It's just Major League Baseball players are like bonkers, off the charts good. Better than you could possibly understand.
Like my brother was a very good like middle school baseball player. You know, maybe I don't know if he listens, and he can correct me. He had like one season and like, you know, he played all summer. Where either he didn't strike out or he didn't swing and miss. Probably didn't strike out. He topped out at high school baseball. Like that's
yeah.
He was the best baseball player that I in his league that I had seen. And yet it was like high school baseball was it for him. That's how it was going to be. And that's, you know, that's how it works.
You have to be really, really good, Tim. You have been, as always, really, really good co-hosting the Metrospective today.
This is
what,
my role.
This is what we do professionally.
I was such a good podcast host as an 8-year-old. You really saw this coming.
Off the charts. Parents were asking for your birth certificate while you were hosting those podcasts.
So mature.
If you have a question for us, please get at us on Twitter. Tim's at Tim Britton. I'm at OG Ted Berg. Or you can email me. Just asktedberg@gmail.com. Thank you as always for listening and peace out.
Adios.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.